is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Welcome to part two of our all-time All-NBA teams episodes of the Hoop Heads podcast. In part one, we discussed our methodology and problems that we encountered while coming up with our lists, and we also discussed who made our all-time All-NBA first team. In this part, we will discuss the second and third teams, who we snubbed, and we'll rank our top five players in NBA history.
All right, so let's start with our second team point guard. Dan, we'll let you go first.
I went with the Big O. And
ooh, with point guard?
Yeah, I went with the Big O at point guard.
So did I. I'm with you, Dan.
Oh, man.
And we can point to the triple-double. You can do all of that kind of stuff as well. But the one thing that gets forgotten with Oscar was the fact that he was, back in the day, a really talented defender on top of it. And somebody who really carried on the defensive end. And on top of that was, of course, averaging the triple-double along the way, you know, that he did for a whole season, ending his career with 25 points, 7 boards, 9.5 assists, and was just, he was as a talented as it comes. And sadly, he played for the Cincinnati Royals, and he played on a really crummy team. And the big question is, what does the Big O look like when he plays on a real team? And he didn't get to do it until later on in life when he found his way to the Bucks and won the title with Lou Alcindor. And we'll never know what he'd look like with real teammates around him, but the guy averaged a triple-double a season for an entire season. It was something we'd never seen before until the modern era. And I think it's the Big O.
All right. So I will say I have him on this team, but I didn't put him in the point guard position.
Okay.
So
all
I have Jerry West.
So I flipped him.
Yeah, so I flipped them too. All right, so we're good. So we're good.
All right, so we're
so we just went with guards. So we went with guards.
So I have Jerry West.
All right, so talk Oscar first. As long as we're talking Oscar, make your case for Oscar.
Here's the deal. I think the big takeaway that I have, and I'll be completely honest when I say I probably have watched 5 minutes footage of Oscar Robertson play, which is probably sad, but the fact that he was a triple-double machine back when no one knew what the heck a triple-double was, and now, you know, obviously that's a stat we keep track of now, and, you know, of course, Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double for a season, blah, 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 and they were like, oh, it's like Oscar Robertson, blah, 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 blah. But no one cared about that back. I mean, triple-doubles weren't really a thing back then, and maybe if people really cared about it and it was as popular as it is now, he would have done it for more seasons than he did it for, you know?
Oh, I could heal off on the triple-double right now so badly. They made it up for Magic. They really did. The sports writer made it up in the 80s to describe Magic Johnson. Before that, that idea didn't even exist of having, you know, 10 assists or 10 blocks or 10, you know, of three different categories. It wasn't until Magic. Before then, that didn't even exist.
So I think that was the big thing with Oscar Robertson. Like, just statistically, it's pretty ridiculous. And like I said, I haven't really watched much of him play, but when I was kind of going through this, and I told you before, I just kind of wrote the names down my list, and I was like, okay, so now I have to kind of go through and look at stats and kind of read some things on that, because I wanted to make sure that I was remembering things correctly, and I just felt like he belonged on the second team. For sure, I had him in the shooting guard position, not in the point guard position. And the only reason I did that was because I did it by height. I mean, that sounds really terrible, but he was 6'5", and Jerry West is 6'2".
There you go.
So that's how I did it that way.
Fair enough. So I'm going to jump off with 2 points about Oscar Robertson. One is a point, Dan, that you made about Wilt Chamberlain and the fact that most of the footage we see of Wilt that's clear and not like grainy black and white footage is of Wilt at the end of his career when he was with the Lakers and he was kind of out of shape and didn't move all that well. And I think we see Oscar Robertson in that same light. Like, it's very, very difficult to find highlights of Oscar Robertson from the early 60s when he was playing for the Cincinnati Royals. Most of what you see is when he was late in his career with the Bucks, a little chunkier, let's just try to be kind here, than he was at the beginning of his career. And I think that tends to make people who maybe weren't around or don't know the history of who Oscar Robertson was downgrade him because they just don't see him in the same light as they see, let's say, a Kobe Bryant or somebody who we see all their games who plays a similar position. So I think that's one thing that sometimes hurts him. But if you go back and you look at the statistics again and you look at what he did as a high school player, you look at what he did as a college player, and then you look at what he did over the course of his NBA career, he was almost the first guy in the modern NBA, so to speak, who played an all-around game and wasn't sort of a, I don't want to say one-dimensional, but if you think of Russell or you think of Chamberlain, they were scorers and rebounders. Wilt obviously had the seasons where he decided he was going to be a passer. But as far as an all-around floor game, being able to have all the skills, and as you mentioned, Dan, also being able to play the defensive end of the floor, which is something that I think sometimes we forget how important being a defensive player is. And we mentioned it when we talked about Jordan, that, you know, not only was he an insane offensive player, but he was, you know, first team all NBA defense like 9 times. And Robertson, had they had all defensive teams, I'm sure he would have been on them. And he clearly, to me, deserves a spot on this second team, especially as we get into, I think, the third team and you start talking about who are the potential candidates for that third team all-NBA, all-time NBA point guard slot. I think all those guys are a tier below what the Big O was able to accomplish in his career.
Great.
All right. Shooting guards. So we all agreed to some extent, whether positionally or not, Jay. Yeah. Jerry West, the logo. Dan, make the case for Jerry West.
So Jerry West was... he was the smoothest player that probably ever played the game up to that point. When Jerry West hit the floor, the NBA had never seen anything like him in his life. There's the reason why he is the logo. He was one of the few guys in the modern NBA who actually had an outside shot. He was one of the few guys that could actually stretch the floor out and not have it that everybody was just piling into the paint all the time. And he was so smooth with the ball. He was a fine passer. He was never an unbelievable passer until like later on in his career. He'd never set that record, but he was such a smooth scorer, and he was one of those guys where his game could translate to any era. I could drop Jerry West into 2019, and we would talk about him like he was a top 5 player in the league. And he was so smooth, and that's the word I continuously use with Jerry West. As you watch him play, the best Jerry West story I ever heard in my life was the scouting report that I think it was Red Auerbach had for him. And he says, Jerry West is going to go right. Good luck stopping him. That was the scouting report. And that's all you need to know. Everybody knew West was going to go right, and nobody could stop him. He's the logo, man.
Yeah. That was the big thing. I'll be honest with you, when I wrote his name down, I just wrote down Jerry West logo, and that's where I, like, he's a great player. He obviously hit that huge shot. Was it the 1970 finals, the 60-footer?
Yep.
Was it game 2 or game 3? I don't remember. Regardless, he hit a 60-footer to tie the game and force it to overtime, and huge. Just like Dan said, smooth. Always, he was inside and outside player too. Like, he could play on the inside if he needed to and get to the rack, and he could also shoot lights out if they needed a bucket. So, you know, that's the reason I put him there. And like I said, when I wrote his name down and put him in the point guard position, I just did it based on height. I saw they said that he played point guard and shooting guard, so I knew that I could get away with that swing. So that's why I did there.
Totally fair. All right. So Jerry West, nickname besides the logo, what was his original nickname? Anybody know?
No.
Mr. Clutch.
Makes sense.
So, you know, when you're given that era, when you're given that moniker while you're playing, it's a pretty good indication.
What about
that,
Zeke from Cabin Creek?
There you go. That's it. That's a good one. West Virginia. So he's from West Virginia, but Mr. Clutch, and hit tons of big shots. Jay, you obviously mentioned one. Only player ever to win the finals MVP on a losing team. So in the 1969 finals, I'm looking at the stats here. He averaged 38 a game, had a triple-double in game 7, which they lost. 42, 13, and 12. I believe he lost, I want to say, 8 times in the finals. It was either 7 or 8. Can't remember for sure. But 7 or 8 times in the finals before finally breaking through with the 69-win Lakers, who held the record for most wins in a row, 33, which they still do. And before the 72-win Warriors got the regular season. I guess the Bulls beat them first, and then the Warriors got set the record, but the Lakers were 69-13 that year. They won the title for Jerry West's only NBA championship. And
do
I think
if anyone will ever win the MVP on a losing team again, Mike, or no?
I mean, if LeBron didn't win it the year without, if LeBron didn't get it that year, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be very, very hard.
That was the thing I said to Dan right when you were talking. I was like, LeBron got robbed in 2015, so.
Yeah, but. I mean, there should be two guys on that list because LeBron certainly was deserving of winning the Finals MVP that first year we went to the Finals. But West was, again, a guy who, Dan, you said it, I think he fits in any era. I think he's a guy who, if you put him in today's modern NBA with the type of shooter that he was, he would have easily adapted his game to be able to shoot threes. And he's a guy where, with the modern training, with all the advances that we've had, that if you put him in today's league, I think there's no doubt that he continues to be a great, great player. And just like Wilt suffers from having lost to Bill Russell's Celtics, Jerry West, in a lot of people's eyes, I think suffers that same fate. But if you just look at the totality of his career, what he was able to do, 10 times all time, 10 times first team all NBA, all-star 14 times, I don't think there's any doubt that Jerry West belongs on this second team. So yeah, we're all in agreement here on the guards. Go ahead.
Mike, do you know he not only won the Finals MVP as losing, he won the Final Four MVP with a losing team.
Really? That I did not know.
I'm sitting here reading a little bit more, and that just it says he earned the NCAA Final Four Most Outstanding Player despite losing in the championship game.
Well, there you go.
So not only did he do it in the NBA, but he did it in the NCAA. So that's just interesting.
Amazing. Amazing. Different era, but just incredible. I think there's no doubt Jerry West is one of the top 10 all-time best players. I don't think there's any doubt about that. All right.
Jerry West is going to go right. Good luck stopping him.
There you go. It's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. All right. Small forward, second team, all NBA history is Dan.
The Legend, 33, Larry Bird. I mean, I at least to me, it's the Legend.
Jason?
I cheated.
Oh, of course you did.
Oh, no.
I didn't put Larry Bird here, Mike, and I know you're going to be sad by that. But all when right, I was
well, let me sl- All right, this I got to hear, cuz now I'm starting to worry about you. Go ahead.
I put Kobe there.
Are you serious?
What? Oh, God.
Oh, God.
That's terrible. That is terrible. We might have to kick you off the show.
I put Kobe there.
That is
terrible.
All right. So I had Larry Bird. We'll let you go ahead and make your case, I guess, for Kobe at small forward on the second team. Go ahead.
So here's the thing. When I was doing the list, and I was trying to keep it positional, and I know Larry Bird was more of a small forward, and but when I was just looking at things, and I was like, Kobe Bryant, I felt like I had to put him on the second team, and I couldn't tear my head away from that. And I don't know why. Maybe it's my bias of the Boston Celtics and not really liking Boston came into play. And like you talked about Karl Malone earlier, Mike, I just, and I have nothing against Larry Bird personally. I want to be clear here, but I just couldn't, maybe it's because when I was growing up and Kobe Bryant was the player before LeBron and the one thing that I always wished for was a Kobe versus LeBron finals every single year. That's all I wanted to see. And we obviously never got that, sadly, because of the stupid Orlando Magic. So we can yell at them for that. And I just think, you know, when I was looking at things and thinking about it, I just had to put Kobe there. Obviously the 81 point game. And then to end your career with 60 points. And I know it was kind of a sad situation that he just shot the ball every single time.
I believe the term was farce. I believe the term you're looking for is farce.
But he had to make the shots.
He did. I get it.
So he had to make the shots, and I'm pretty sure I don't have it sitting in front of me. I'm pretty sure he had 20 in the fourth quarter, something like that. He had a lot, and a lot of it was in the last 3 or 4 minutes. And it wasn't like, and maybe I'm misremembering, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. It wasn't like they weren't guarding him and they were just letting him shoot the ball. I'm pretty sure someone was guarding him most of the game. Maybe. Oh, Dan's giving me the roll of his eyes.
Kinda. They were. It was the Utah Jazz, and nobody was going anywhere at that point. I mean, it was after a while. I think they kind of caught on to it. But you're right. He had a bunch of points in the fourth.
But he had to make the shots, and
it's true.
He was an old man on a broken Achilles that's still at that point because it was repaired. But I mean, he was never the same player after he did it. So I had to go there, and you know, I might get some hate mail from whoever listens to this. Just don't let Bill Simmons listen to this. But the fact that I have him over Larry Bird, but that's where I went. So I just had to go there. I don't know.
All right, Dan, can you straighten him out, please?
All right. I got a lot of Kobe Bean problems. I mean, and none of them involve Colorado. I'm leaving that out of the question. Here's the thing that I always had with Kobe is, spoiler alert, I put him third team. But my Kobe problems always were the fact that, A, he was a Jordan clone. And he was the closest you were ever going to get to a Jordan clone. The problem with Kobe was always everything that Jordan did, Kobe did like 95% of. And there was always that 5% missing, including the fact of when he was like, oh, I guess I'm going to care this year about playing defense. He kind of had Wilt Chamberlain syndrome, where he's like, oh, this year I'm going to play defense. Oh, no, never mind. I'm done playing defense. Oh, this year I'm going to pass the ball. Oh, no, to hell with that. I'm done passing the ball. I cursed again. Sorry. And, like, he would have these moments of doing these things, and then he would pick apart his teammates, and he would do all of that stuff. And he was unbelievable. He was a great player. He would go down as an all-timer, but I would take the legend over him every single day of the week without question. Because I knew for a fact Larry Bird was not the most athletic man on any of these teams. He was far from that.
He was sneaky athletic, probably.
He was sneaky athletic because everybody was looking at his mustache the entire time going, you know, son, you probably need to get rid of that thing. Because that thing, like, there are like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree might have more leaves on it than that thing. So
Larry did not spend a lot of time on personal grooming while he was in the league. Let's put it that way.
No, he did not. You know, hitting jumpers the way that he would do it. He could play any position that you wanted him to. He played the four for a little bit. He played the three. He could play some two. He probably could have played point if Red Auerbach wanted him to in that moment. The way that he would just do things like, I'm going to play this entire quarter left-handed. And he would do it, and he'd blow you away. And he would hit the point where he'd hit so many buckets that the opposing team would start cheering for him because he was going nuts. And he was a defensive liability. Bird steals the ball. The entire 80s were defined by Bird and Magic and Kareem as well. And Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale. We can go down the line from there. But it's the legend. It's 33. He's phenomenal. He's the man, the myth, and the legend. And he was the first team All-NBA player. And I had him first team on this until when LeBron made his playoff run. And when I watched the LeBron playoff run, I went, all right, he's better. I'm sorry. He just is. And it broke my heart to say it. But, yeah, second team, Larry Bird.
All right. So here's my argument. One, I'm going to preface this by saying, in the moment, I despised and hated Larry Bird. So I was a Magic guy. I was a Laker guy. I hated the Celtics. I remember telling my dad that when the Boston Garden was going to get torn down, that I'd want to go there and just watch it crumble into the ground because I was so excited to see it disappear. So I was not a Celtics fan. I was not a Larry Bird fan. As I've aged and watched and thought and listened, I've come to respect Larry Bird far more than I did in the moment while he was playing. And so the case for Larry Bird over Kobe Bryant, I think, hinges on a couple things. One, if you look at Kobe's titles. So he won more titles than Bird. Kobe won 5. Larry Bird won 3. Well, Kobe won 3 of those as the second best player on the team to Shaq. And I think that's pretty much inarguable. Maybe the last one, they were close to being co-best players. But to me, I think Shaq was still the driving force behind the three-peat Lakers. So that's a factor. Bird, 3-time MVP, won his 3 MVPs back to back to back. Kobe got 1 MVP, debatable 1 at that. And I just think that one of the things that people who probably would argue in favor of Kobe would look at the totality and the length of time that he played. And he had a much longer career than Larry Bird. Larry Bird was done after 12 years. Injuries just kind of ate him up. And his last year or two, even, I know they, his last year they played the Cavs in the playoffs, and he was just a shell of himself. He had a giant, huge back brace and could barely run. And Bird's a case of another guy who, if he would have known the things that we know now about taking care of his body, and he would have had access to the type of, you know, trainers and just nutrition and all those things, I think his career and just the physical therapy that he would have been able to get and the treatment, I think his career would have been far, far different. And we talked earlier about a guy that we would want to take a shot in the last 2 minutes of a game. And if I didn't have Jordan, I'm not so sure that I wouldn't have wanted Larry Bird. I watched him make a lot of shots that I didn't want him to make in the moment when I was rooting for the other team. And Bird was just, he was a great passer. He was a great rebounder for his size. He was an unbelievable shooter. Again, he's a guy who, you put him in today's NBA and the number of threes that he would have taken in the league right now, I think you could have probably increased his scoring average 2, 3, 4 points a game, because he just would have been banging home so many more threes in today's game. And plus, he fits as a small forward. So I think, to me, Bird has to be, he's clearly a top 10 player all time. And he has to be on the second team. Plus, he fits positionally as a small forward. So that's where I see.
You know how many game winners Kobe Bryant hit, Mike?
Listen, Kobe's up there on the list of guys you'd want to take a last shot. I agree.
27.
Look, I don't disagree with you. I'm not saying Kobe is not a clutch shooter. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that Larry Bird is a better player than Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
I mean, Bird has held the mantle of the greatest shooter in NBA history for probably 10 years.
Yeah,
I'd have to say somewhere in between there. Yeah.
Yep, at least.
Probably until we started seeing, you know, Reggie Miller and Ray Allen and those kind of guys take over. I mean, until then, it was Bird. Bird was the greatest shooter we ever watched in our lives.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. I got to take the legend. I just got to take
Okay, him. That's fine. We can disagree. That's all right.
All right. So we've had two disagreements, and on both of those disagreements, two of us had one player and one of us had another. So that's all right. This one I think is going to be interesting. This to me is the most interesting one we've gotten to yet. And I'll be curious to see where we all went with it. So second team power forward.
Oh, Dan, we already said where we went with it.
Yeah. The big fundamental.
We're Tim Duncan. We got Tim Duncan.
Yeah. Big okay. fundamental.
All right.
And,
so,
and if you guys were to yell at me for putting Bill Russell as a power forward, I would have slid Tim Duncan in there and shut up.
And then would have put Bill Russell at power forward in the second team.
Yeah, I would have done it there.
All right, so here's where I fudged it just slightly. I put Durant as my second team
power forward. Oh, I like that.
I put Durant as my second team power forward. Now, so let me make the case. Obviously, I agree with you guys that Duncan, as a pure power forward, I think Duncan is, again, I had him on my first team, so completely agree that if I had to rank Duncan or Durant, if that was the comparison, I would put Duncan ahead of Durant. So my question is, compared to the guys that are below Durant who are power forwards, which I guess we'll talk about when we get to the third team, you look at what Durant has done to this point in his career, and he's averaging, I think, just a shade under 30 points a game for his career. He's won multiple championships. He's a guy who scores every which way that you could possibly want. He may be the greatest just shooter from all over different parts of the floor, and a guy who's unguardable that has ever played. I don't think there's anybody at his size who's been able to handle the ball and get any kind of shot that he wants. And he obviously has the size of a power forward. He's probably not as defensive minded maybe as a guy that you would want. He's certainly not the same level of defender that Tim Duncan was in his prime, which is why I slotted him at number two. And I guess this was the first one where, because I tried to stay relatively positionally correct, that I had a hard time looking at the guys who were just behind Durant and saying that Durant wasn't better than them. And so this is the one guy of these 10 players that I have in on the first and second team, I would not rank Durant as one of the 10 best players if we just eliminated the positional restriction. So I think Durant is outside of the top 10 at this point in his career with the chance to get to the top 10, depending on how he finishes his career. But
which
there
is obviously
are other,
a big question mark now.
Correct, correct. But there are other guys that I would slot in ahead of him if I was just ranking purely the top 10 and without regard to position. But when I looked at it from a positional standpoint, I just liked Durant better than I liked the guys who were behind him simply from a skill set and championship winning pedigree. I just felt like Durant was better than the guys that were behind him. So yeah, that's why I slotted Durant there.
So Dan said earlier, spoiler alert, I have Durant on my third team. So
Fair enough.
So I'm in agreement with you. I put him in the small forward position of the third. We'll get there, but I have him there. So
all right, and Durant and LeBron are the only two modern guys I have on my three teams.
Those are the only two modern guys I have on my three teams.
I might have somebody different.
All right. Well, I'll be curious to hear that one. All right, let's move on.
Wait a minute. Did we give Timmy his props?
Give us more of the Duncan case, Dan. Give us more of the Duncan case here.
Okay. I couldn't remember if we did it because I think we went to Russell there instead. But look, he's the big fundamental. He's the most consistent player. You could argue the most consistent player in NBA history. He was the perfect Spurs player. He completely derailed the Laker dynasty. He held off a lot of other dynasties, you know, and basically
he single-handedly ended the Heat dynasty.
On top of that, stopped the Phoenix Sun dynasty and made it so that, you know, this era that we're in now happened like 5 years later. I'm telling you, man, if the Suns win the title in 07, I got a feeling we're where we are now in 2014. Like, I got a feeling it's that far back that everybody starts picking up on what's happening now.
Yep.
And Timmy is right in the middle of all that stuff. He was an extension of Greg Popovich. He was an unbelievable defender. He was an unbelievable rebounder. And he could score when he needed to. And I'll give him this, too. When his back started going out and when he was knee on knee for a long time, when it was bone on bone and he kept playing, he still sat at 13.9 points a game, his second to the last year, and had close to 10 rebounds. And he was the big fundamental. I mean, it's really the only way to describe it. There's nobody you want taking a shot at the elbow besides Tim Duncan.
Well, and I was going to say, my big thing for Tim Duncan, and that's really the only thing I'm going to say, is whenever I talk about using the glass, yes, I'll be like, Tim Duncan. And right, the kids will look at me and be like, you know, Tim Duncan, San Antonio Spurs legend. And by the way, if anyone doesn't think that he's being groomed to be Greg Popovich's replacement, if they don't believe that,
that's going to be fun.
That's got to be what's happening, right? I mean, he's going to be Pop's replacement when Pop retires.
You would think that.
I mean, he was a lifetime Spur, and now he's going to take over the reins. And I can't think of a better person to do it. So I think what Dan said is exactly right. And I put him in the second team because I couldn't put him ahead of Russell. So
yeah. I mean, fair. I said I cheated, and if you guys called me out for it, I would have put him first team.
Yeah, totally fair. Obviously, I had him on the first team, so I'm a big fan. I think what sets him apart from everybody else that I looked at this position was his versatility, meaning he was a great offensive player, he was a great defensive player, he was a great rebounder, he was a great teammate, he was a great leader by all accounts, and your team doesn't succeed at the level that the Spurs succeeded for that many years with that many different guys that cycled through the team and how many different iterations of the Spurs were there. Obviously Parker and Ginobili were there for most of it, but other than those three guys, it was basically new groups each time that they went and won a title. And so you look at that and you look at the totality of his work. You look at the fact that he played both ends of the floor. You look at how it always felt like he came up big in big moments. I can't remember a big game where he didn't at least show up and have a quality game.
Game one, when he put that three in an overtime against the Suns, will just forever be burnt in my head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you think about, you know, what the Suns, you know, that era of the 7 seconds or less Suns, and the fact that if a couple different breaks and suspensions and things hadn't gone against them, that team may have won multiple titles. And you said it, Dan. Duncan stopped the Lakers dynasty. He never allowed the Suns dynasty to get started. He ended the Heat dynasty. That's pretty impressive for one guy to be a part of all that. And Duncan is very, very deserving. I think he's a top 10 player all time, regardless of position. And whether you put him on the first team or the second team, he deserves to be somewhere on there without question. So,
all right.
Beautiful.
All right. All right. Second team center. So I'm guessing, based on what you guys did with Bill Russell on your first team, that we're all going to be in agreement on the second team, which means that, well, you'll see what it means here in a second. Dan, give us your second team center.
That would be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Lou Alcindor, however you want to call him.
Jason?
Oh, boy. I'm going to get it again.
Oh, my God. No. What did you do this time?
I put Shaq.
Oh. Oh, my God.
That sound of pure disgust is just all I need today.
Oh, that is awful. I mean, I put Kobe on this team.
That is awful. All right, go ahead. I had Kareem.
Okay, I will be clear. I was between Kareem and Shaq.
I
want to just be clear here. We're talking NBA. So I'm shisting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because he didn't play in the NBA his whole career because he played in the ABA. So I want to be
clear. No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't?
Kareem was in the NBA the whole time.
Who was drafted by the Bucks?
You're thinking Dr. J.
Oh, I'm thinking Dr. J.
Drafted by the Bucks.
But my bad.
Right, wait. We're gonna call timeout. We want you to go back and talk to your crack research staff and come back with a better choice.
Well, no, I have Shaq, and I just, here's the thing, and when he came into the league, he was the LeBron before. I feel like he was LeBron before LeBron got in the league. He was must-see TV. He was always impacting the game. He was making huge things happen in all times. No matter what happened, he was always a part of it. I mean, he broke a backboard, for God's sake, in the middle of a basketball game.
Wait, hold on. No, you're giving away my third team center, Daryl Dawkins. Because he broke some backboards, too.
I know,
so,
but
so did just... Jerome Lane. Send it in, Jerome! Can we get Jerome Lane on this team?
I just feel like Shaq was always must-see TV, and I know, obviously, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar might be slighted here because there wasn't as much watching the NBA as there was. But when I was watching the NBA, there were two players when I was growing up that I really wanted to always watch their games. It was Michael Jordan, and it was Shaquille O'Neal. Those are the two names that whenever I would look to see what games were on the NBA and NBC, listening to the fantastic theme song.
Oh, John Tesh, baby.
John Tesh, baby.
Beautiful.
I would always look to see, is Jordan playing? Is Shaquille playing? Because those are the two players that I cared about watching, and that was it. Until LeBron came around, those were the two players that I wanted to watch play at any given day, and there really wasn't anyone else I cared about. And I know that might sound terrible, but and that's kind of why I went with him there. And obviously he won a bunch of championships. He only won four. He didn't win five, and Kobe has one more than him. Congratulations. But I just think, you know, wherever he went, he was larger than life personality, and that's why I went with him there.
Well, and here's the thing with Shaq is prime Shaq was insanity. He was like nothing. He was the unmovable object. You know, they had to create new rules because everything that guys were doing to Shaq was a foul, and he was unbelievable. The problem that Shaq runs into is that in our minds, the first thing that at least I think of, and Mike, I might be speaking for you on this
Pack
one.
Shaq.
I think of the guy who is just completely torched, just putting on, okay, now this season I'm going to wear a Cavs uniform and be overweight. Oh, look, now I'm wearing a Celtics uniform and I'm overweight. Oh, look, now I'm in a Suns uniform and I'm wrecking the most beautiful basketball team ever created. Oh, and I'm overweight. And, like, that's the problem with Shaq is that we've forgotten Laker Shaq, and we've forgotten Magic Shaq, and it's become that we see Shaq and we're like, oh yeah, it's the big walleye with his being overweight and getting in the way, and not the Shaq that could completely bowl people over and was otherworldly. And
yeah,
so
I think
you can say that.
Yeah, I think that peak Shaq, as you said, is as dominant of a player as there ever was. But peak Shaq didn't last very long. And I think if we look at everybody we've mentioned up to this point, I think you would probably make the case that every one of those guys maximized or came very, very close to maximizing the talent that they had. And I think Shaq is the first guy that we could say that if he had been a little bit more dedicated, if he had trained a little bit harder, if he had brought his best every single day, that he could have had a better career. And I don't think we can say that about anybody else that we've mentioned so far. And so, as you said, Dan, that's kind of what sticks with me. And I think Shaq is a guy who, if you just look at his best year, his best game, his best season, you'd have a hard time arguing that somebody was better than him. But in this case, we have to look at the totality of his career. And the guy that you and I talked about and that you and I picked, Dan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, won. He's the all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA. He has won 6 NBA championships. He has won 6 regular season MVPs. He's the only guy with 6 in the history of the league. He has, as dominant as Shaq was, and don't get me wrong, Shaq was unbelievably dominant. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has the most unguardable shot in the history of basketball in his bag. And that skyhook, nobody shot it like that before him. Nobody has shot it like him after he's been gone. He's the only guy who's been able to do it. I remember watching him and seeing him shoot that shot from 18 feet away. And he just rise up, totally unblockable. The shot was, he was going to make it. And I think Kareem over the, again, his entire career, you look at his complete body of work, and his complete body of work far outstrips Shaq. And I think Kareem at his very, very best is at worst the equal of peak Shaq. And then when you combine that with his longevity and what he's able to do over the course of his career, he won the finals MVP 14 years apart, which is incredible. It's just a testament to what he was able to do and how long he was able to play. And I think, you know, my debate here was Kareem or Bill Russell. And so you guys already had Russell on the first team. And now by me taking Kareem for the second team, I've bumped Bill Russell down to the third team. And yet, if I look at my player rankings, you know, if we get to that here, you know, I'm going to have Russell a lot higher when it looks than it looks like he would be based on me having him on the third team. But I just think the totality of Kareem's career, 6 MVPs, all the championships, all-time leading scorer in the history of the league, Kareem has to be on that second team.
100%, man.
All right. Third team. Man, here's where I think we're going to see some different names. Point guard, third team, all-time All-NBA, Dan.
All right. What do we want to do? Because I threw some honorable mentions down. Do you want honorable mentions before I give you the third team, or do we do that after?
Let's give the team, and then after we go through the third team, then we'll go through our most notable, or maybe give the last guy you eliminated if you think it's a controversial pick. Give me maybe the last guy that you crossed off before you chose the guy you chose.
Okay. All right, boys. Get ready to throw something at me. Steph Curry. He's the greatest shooter I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anybody like him. I have never seen somebody who, the minute he crosses half court, is an offensive threat. I have never seen somebody who is that much of a wizard with the ball, who can finish with both hands around the rim the way that he can. He took everything that Steve Nash did well and made it better. He took Steve Nash's layup package and added three-point shooting to it in a way that Nash could only dream of. He's a talented passer. He's a good defender. He's not a great defender. He's not an all-world defender. He's a good defender. But I have never seen anybody in my life who crosses half court and you immediately have to pick him up. He stretches your defense so far, and he's such a whiz with the ball. I had a hard time picking anybody else. I mean, again, Steve Nash is my favorite player ever. And I looked at this and went, Steph Curry is it just he's I can't make that reference anymore because now it's in really poor taste. It's the one song, and you guys can piece together what I'm talking about. It's the one song where the remix is clearly better than the original. And it was done by an artist that I don't want to get into.
Yeah,
and
I gotcha.
That's Steph Curry. He's the greatest shooter I've ever watched in my life.
So I will say I was between Steph Curry and the guy I ultimately ended with, and I feel like Steph Curry will probably be past him at the end of this, but I went with John Stockton.
He's an honorable mention for me.
So I went with Stockton, and I feel bad for John Stockton because I feel like he always was on the losing end of the Michael Jordan. And
so was Clyde.
So was everyone. But I ended up going with John Stockton just purely because I think he played the point guard position in his era the way that point guard position was meant to be played at that time. Just distributing the basketball and just always kind of being a floor general. And, you know, I think we can agree that he probably wasn't the most athletic player ever on the floor. And he still did a lot of good things. And obviously he had Karl Malone to help him out and Greg Ostertag and all those other guys.
Mark Eaton.
Jeff Hornacek is on line four.
Here's the glaring problem that I had with picking Stockton, but I ended with him. He only averaged 13 points a game in his career. And he's definitely the low man on my totem pole. And if I was ranking, you know, if I was ranking my 15 players on my teams, he would be number 15 for sure. And I think this was kind of the dilemma we ran into. And I just didn't feel like I was ready to put Steph Curry there yet. And maybe that's wrong of me to say that, but I just wasn't quite ready to do that yet.
Yeah, this spot was the hardest one for me out of any of them to pick. I agonized over this one more than anything. And the two guys that both of you mentioned were both guys that I considered strongly. And I looked at their cases. I looked at, Dan, I agree with you 100% that Steph clearly has taken the mantle of being the greatest shooter of all time. There's no question that he warps the floor and forces defenses to play him in places that nobody has ever had to be guarded before, which opens up other things for his teammates in ways that I don't think we can even necessarily measure, where if you took him off the floor, the way that the geometry of the floor would then tilt when he's not there versus when he is there. And so I have a hard time making an argument against Curry. Stockton, I feel like if you want to, I think, Jason, you made a great point that during the era when Stockton was playing, he was the prototypical point guard of his era. He did it better for longer than anybody else in that era. And yet at the same time, never won a title. He was only two times first team All-NBA. He has the longevity. You know, he had a long 20-year career for a point guard to be able to play at a high level as he did for such a long time. That definitely counts for something. And I think that's what got him some consideration in my book. So for me, honestly, though, those two guys were not my final two, although I did talk about or think about both of them. My final two, and again, it's interesting how, and I don't know if you guys found this, but as I was going through the list, and I get to a spot where I kind of got stuck, and it seemed like depending on which spot it was, my criteria for why I chose a guy changed. Like for some guys, I'm like, oh, it's the longevity and look at this guy's career. And when he played this long and he amassed this amount of statistics, and then other guys, I'm like, well, with this guy at his peak was the best. And even though his career was a little shorter, when he was at his best, he was better than this other guy. And so I guess when I looked at this, I kept going back and forth. And the two guys that it came down to for me were Steve Nash and Isaiah Thomas, not Boston Celtics Isaiah Thomas, but Detroit Pistons Isaiah Thomas. And Detroit Pistons Isaiah Thomas, and again, I was not a fan of the Pistons I was a Jordan and Bulls guy, so it's not like I'm not stumping for Isaiah Thomas because he was my favorite player. But that guy was, as tough as anybody who's ever played in the league at his size. He was an incredible scorer. He was, I think, for that particular team and their particular personality, he was exactly the kind of prickly type of guy that that team needed. Now, that rubbed lots of other people the wrong way, and he famously was left off of the Dream Team when probably he deserved to be on that team if you look at that era. But regardless of that, I think when Isaiah was at his peak, he was as good as there's ever been when he was at his peak as a pure point guard. And yet I went with Steve Nash. And the reason why I went with Nash, and again, this is one of those weird fluky things that it's just what popped into my head as I was doing it and as I was trying to separate. And I just thought, if I'm on an all-time NBA team, I want a guy who doesn't need to score in order to have maximum impact on the game. And that, to me, was the biggest separator between him and these other guys. I think he was more dynamic than Stockton. And I think Isaiah and Steph both impacted the game equally with their scoring as they did with their passing. And so on a team like this with all-time greats, I just felt like Nash would fit. Two-time MVP, great passer, sort of invented the off-the-wrong-foot scoop shot and just different ways of doing things than anybody had ever played the position before. The 7 seconds or less Suns were so incredibly unique that he ushered that sort of new wave era of modern NBA basketball into the league. And so I could split hairs here all day, and I would not argue with any of those guys that you guys mentioned, or Isaiah, if you want to put any of those guys in that spot. I would be equally fine with any of them, but in the end, I went with Nash.
I can't argue with him. He's my favorite player ever. He's the reason I fell back in love with the NBA. I own two jerseys. One of them is the Seattle Supersonics Ray Allen jersey, and the second one is a Steve Nash jersey.
There you go.
And I'll never get rid of it. I love Steve Nash, so I will not fight you.
All right, sold. All right, let's move on. Shooting guard. Dan?
I hate myself. It's Kobe. I hate putting him here because I hated him. I hated watching him. I hated all those things. We talked about him earlier, but I had to put him there.
Yeah, I have him too. We talked about him, I think.
And I have the guy that I snubbed there.
Oh, really?
I have Larry Bird there.
All right.
I know he plays small forward, but just see why I had to put him there.
You can make it work.
All right. All right. Well, we've talked about Kobe. We've talked about Bird. I'm not quite sure, Jason, about your positional awareness, but we'll just move on. All right. Small forward on our third team. Again, this is an interesting choice for me. I'm not sure that my choice is going to be completely defendable, but I'm curious to see which direction you guys went with small forward. So, Dan, start with you.
Julius Erving. I went Dr. J because he was the first player that ever really played above the rim. And he was the first player that brought so much flair to the game of basketball. And, you know, of course, a lot of it took place in the ABA, and his best ball was played in the ABA. But just what he was able to do with the ball is just legendary. And he was a great defender. He was a good rebounder. He was a decent passer on top of it. I mean, on multiple seasons of averaging more than 10 rebounds a game, multiple seasons, you know, 31, 27, 29 points. You can go down the line from there. But more than anything else, I mean, he just revolutionized the game of basketball. We had never seen anybody like him before. And, you know, now in today's game, would his game translate? I don't know. Probably not, because everybody's gone so much more leaps and bounds over him. But in the moment, I mean, it's Dr. J. He's Julius Erving. He's unbelievable. You know, 16-time All-Star. Two-time, you know, ABA champion, 7-time All-NBA, won a title with Moses that year. I mean,
the 83 Sixers.
83 Sixers. I mean, they were.
That might have been my favorite team of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I went Dr. J.
Jason.
So I was between. I had to do some finagling here.
You were the master of the shoehorn in this. I just want you to know that.
Wait, so, hold on. Wait, Manute Bol.
No, I ended up I did end up settling on Dr. J here too. So I'm in agreement with Dan.
All right, me too, fellas.
Oh wow! Holy mackerel!
Awesome. Listen.
So I put him there. Basically everything that Dan said, being playing above the rim and just kind of revolutionizing the game. And you know, when I wrote the names down, I put his name down and I thought about it and I said, you know what? When you hear all the current NBA players, like, I guess I shouldn't say current, but like the older heads in the NBA, like they always talked about Dr. J. Like I always remember LeBron talking about Dr. J and Michael Jordan. I always remember Kobe talking about Dr. J and who was constantly always coming back to do slam dunk contest grade ratings mm-hmm. was Dr. J, because I think he was so beloved by the players and they all looked up to him and they modeled a lot. I think a lot of them modeled their games after him because he Absolutely. Was one of the first guys to play above the rim. So I think when I did thinking about all those things, I that's why I put him there.
Doc deserves to be on this team. And I think he deserves to be on this team, not just from a playing standpoint, but he was an iconic figure during the time when he played in the ABA and the NBA. He kind of represented a certain modern era of city urban basketball that hadn't been seen before. Like you said, Dan, he was the first guy that the public sort of became aware of playing above the rim. Maybe there was Elgin Baylor, maybe there was Connie Hawkins back in the day that, you know, had that same reputation, but those guys played in an era where there just wasn't as much media coverage. And to me, the shame of it is that Doc's ABA years, there's so little footage of Doc when he was at his peak in the ABA from an athletic standpoint. And the fact that those years of his career are lost and that we'll never be able to see that is one of the great tragedies. Because I think that you look at what he did in the NBA, and I think of my childhood, and there's three iconic Dr. J plays that stand out to me that I'll always remember. And one is the 1977 playoffs against our finals against Portland, and he's coming down the middle of the floor, maybe slightly off to the right, and the camera shot is from behind him, and he dunks over top of Bill Walton, and it literally looks like the ball is like 2.5 feet above the rim. And I'm sure part of that was the camera angle, but he just dunked so hard. So that's one play I remember.
Is that why Bill Walton's talking the way he's talking?
That could very well be. It might have just permanently rattled Bill's brain. Who knows? Then Doc had the move around Mark Landsberger. I forget which finals that was, but where he came down the right side of the lane and somehow contorted his body around Landsberger, around the basket, and seemingly just went like three different directions in the air, which I think is physiologically impossible. That's one of the greatest shots probably in NBA history. And then the famous rock the cradle dunk in the Spectrum over Michael Cooper that yep. you still see that on the internet. I probably see that once a day as I'm scrolling through Twitter. Poor Michael Cooper just having that ball just slam down in his face. So Doc was just, he was an iconic player. I loved him as a kid. First guy that when I watched him play, I wanted to be like him. First pair of shoes I ever got were the Dr. J leather Converse All-Stars. And, you know, Jason, you mentioned about other players looking up to Doc. And I think that that's one of the things that I think always stood out about him was just the fact that he was always classy, except for the time he got in the fight with Larry Bird. But otherwise, for the most part during his career, I think that it was sort of unanimous. Doc was probably ahead of his time in terms of how he handled himself with the media and just the way that he portrayed himself publicly. And he was just a great ambassador for the game, which he's continued to do since he's retired. And there was nobody that was more fun to watch. I just love watching him as a kid. And I think if you're looking at the most influential NBA players in the last 40 years, Doc is very, very high on this list. So he's got to be on one of these teams. So I was glad to hear all you guys put Doc on it. When I put him on there, I'm like, is my own bias getting in the way here because of how much I loved him? And evidently not. So glad to see Doc on the third team. All right, power forward.
Dirk. I went Dirk. And right. It might be controversial, but I mean, 7 feet tall, German import. Was can shoot the lights out from anywhere on the floor. That fall away one-legged shot that he has from the elbow, still unstoppable to this day, even though he's over the hill, and so far over the hill that I think there's now fog on top of it. And, I mean, he just was so talented, and in his prime, he was unstoppable. He was absolutely unstoppable. He was a below-average defender, to put it nicely, but he could grab some boards when he needed him to, and he's just... Again, we're talking about guys. This guy revolutionized the game. Seven-footer that could hit threes. Before then, it was, okay, maybe Manute Bol, but that was kind of just more funny than anything else when he would do it. And that was about it. And then Dirk came along and, like, really made it, and they built an offense around him. And, you know, 07, he wins the MVP and was an absolute monster and loses to the We Believe Warriors and then, you know, beat the Heat. And... I was a Dirk fan. I loved watching him. So, yeah, Dirk.
Yeah, so I don't have Dirk there, but I will say I was very happy that I was able to attend the Dallas Cavs game. That was the only game I wanted to make sure I went and saw because I wanted to see Dirk play one last time.
Yeah.
I also kind of have a man crush on Luka Doncic and his basketball abilities. So,
yeah, he's a stud.
So there was twofold there. So I talked my dad into going to the game. So I was very happy I got to see him play. I do not have him. I have another seven-footer that could shoot threes, and his name is Kevin Durant. So I put Kevin Durant in my team here, and this was the same position you put him in, Mike, right? So we're in.
Yeah, I had him as a power forward.
So I have him in my power forward. I have him as my power forward on the third team, and I likely think as long as he comes through healthy and all this, there's a good chance he's going to end up on my second team by the time his career is all said and done. So
I love Durant. I love Durant. He's one of my favorite players to watch. And he'll probably top one of these guys by the time his career is done. He is an honorable mention. I had him sitting next to Dr. J at small forward. And it was flip a coin. And I decided to go with the older guy. And knowing that probably if we do this in 5 years, it'll be a completely different answer. Yeah. I love Durant. I take nothing away from him in any of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I think... Mine came down to, I didn't pick, well, obviously I already had Durant on the team. I did not take Dirk. This in the point guard slot, which we already talked about, were probably my two toughest. I'm not sure that I loved any of the candidates. I felt like each of them had flaws that on an all-time NBA team that I wouldn't necessarily want my players on this team to have. So Dirk, you mentioned it, like great offensive player, totally unique, transformed the position from something that it had been before into something that it was becoming. He was that bridge. The other guys I considered here were Kevin Garnett, Karl Malone, and the guy I ultimately chose, which was Chuck Barkley. And
the round mounted rebound.
He was an honorable mention for me.
All three of those guys were honorable mentions.
And man, it was like, I felt like I was splitting hairs trying to figure out what direction to go with them. I can honestly say I wasn't completely thrilled with picking Barkley, but I was less unthrilled about picking him than I would have been about anybody else. So the case against Dirk was the defensive side of the ball. The case against Garnett was I feel like he was never as dominant as any of those other guys at any one stretch in his career. And he didn't have as much team success as the other ones. And again, that's not necessarily completely his fault, but it has to play into it. And then Karl Malone obviously had a tremendous amount of statistical success, was very, you know, had a long career, a ton of longevity, played at a very, very high level for a very long time. And yet in the last 2 minutes, I did not want Karl Malone on my team. And that to me counts more than just about anything as someone who played a lot of basketball in their time. I want guys who are going to come through in big moments to be part of my team. And I never felt like Karl Malone reached that level. And although Barkley didn't win a title, you can go back and if you want to watch the 93 finals and watch him go toe-to-toe with Jordan and of anybody in that era, that year of Charles Barkley was as close as anybody's come to reaching the level that Jordan played at consistently throughout his career. Barkley was 98% of what Jordan was, and that's what made Jordan special, is that he figured out a way to defeat a guy who was determined, talented, at the very peak of his powers, and Jordan was still good enough to be able to beat him down. But Barkley was incredible in that series, and you look at what Barkley did across his career, and then I looked at which of these guys at their very absolute apex would I rather have, and that's why I landed on Barkley.
I can't disagree with you. He was a snub for me. I had him on my first one out list, so to speak. Like one, he was one of the first guys out. So
gotcha. All right. Well, I think we did pretty good. I think there was a lot of agreement between all of us. I think
we have to do center still, Mike.
Yeah, we have to do center. So let's do it. Let's do it this. Oh, we still have to do. Oh, you're right. Sorry, I forgot. I'm so excited. So a third team center. So mine's Bill Russell, because I have Wilt, Kareem, and then Russell.
I have Kareem there.
I put Hakeem Olajuwon there, baby.
All right, that's fair.
Greatest footwork I've ever seen in a big man. Greatest footwork I've ever seen in my life. The dream shake is still unstoppable. I think if Hakeem walked onto a floor right now at 50 years old, he could still pull the dream shake on a bunch of these guys and they wouldn't know what to do. He was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon, 13.
Again, a guy who played both ends of the floor.
Oh, stud.
I mean, just an incredible athlete, incredible defender, incredible offensive player, a guy who came to basketball late and was a soccer player as a kid. And he was one of my favorite college players. Phi Slamma Jamma was probably one of my favorite college teams of all time. My favorite part of that team was the fact that they had their first names on the back of their jersey. That was probably my favorite. That was probably one of my favorite things.
Oh, that team was so cool. That team was the pinnacle of cool.
It was. They were incredible. So I agree. Hakeem makes my list of the top 15 players of all time. But because I don't have him ranked ahead of Wilt, Kareem, or Russell, and I try to stick positionally.
Hakeem,
well, I cheated a little bit, but Hakeem, I think I cheated the least of all of us.
Darn millennials, Hakeem, I tell you.
That's right. But Hakeem definitely is right there. So let's talk quickly your most notable snubs, and then maybe we'll rank the top 10 or 15 real quick and wrap it up, because we're probably coming up on 2 hours. So
I did tell Dad, we don't really talk NBA for 45 minutes. So this
we knew this. I knew this was going to be long, man. Like, yeah, I told you, I knew we were getting into something here.
Yeah. So I guess, Dan, you want to do your
stuff? All right. So point guard, Bob Cousy has to be mentioned in all of this. I mean, we went this whole time. Bob Cousy was unbelievable. He was the first true passing point guard with some flair to him, and still alive to this day. Steve Nash, John Stockton. Those are my three guard snubs. And Zeke. I forgot Zeke in there too. But those are my four point guard snubs. Shooting guard snub, I wanted to figure out how to get George Gervin in here somewhere. The Iceman, a lot of people forget how good the Iceman was. He's the best mid-range jump shooter in the guard spot probably ever. It's either him or Jordan on who do you want to shoot mid-rangers. Maybe Durant is probably three on that list. So in some order how you want to do it, but the Iceman needs to be mentioned. Kevin Durant, we already talked about him on forward. Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Kevin Garnett. Pete Garnett was something to really behold, and a lot of people remember Celtics Garnett. Timberwolves Garnett, when he was surrounded by like Wally Szczerbiak and Terrell Brandon and that train wreck team that he had there, he was unbelievable on that squad. And then Shaquille O'Neal, and then Moses Malone, the only center I've ever seen in my life, except for Andre Drummond, who will purposely miss shots to grab offensive rebounds
absolutely
to get better position to put it in. And it's him and Andre Drummond, the only two guys I've ever seen that can do that. So those are my honorable mentions.
So my point guard honorable mention, and I don't have as many as Dan had here, was my point guard honorable mention was Steph Curry. The only other person that I think, Mike, you mentioned in passing, I had Elgin Baylor as an honorable mention, and I had Moses Malone was my center. If I had a fourth team, he probably would have been my fourth team.
Gotcha. Center. All right, so I have two guys that we haven't mentioned, so that were on my snub list. Everybody else that you guys have talked about were people that I had on my list to consider. The two guys that I have on here that I had in the debate, one, David Robinson. I think people forget, again, how good he was. There was the one playoff series where Hakeem kind of destroyed David Robinson after Robinson had won the MVP and Hakeem kind of made him look silly. And I think that was sort of the downfall of David Robinson's legacy. But if you go back and watch, again, peak David Robinson was an incredible, incredible athlete, great on both ends of the floor. And I think he deserves a mention. And the other guy that an old timer who recently passed away, John Havlicek, Ohio guy.
Yeah, Hondo's a good one.
You know, I think he, if you look at, you know, we talked about how important that winning was to Bill Russell's legacy. And Havlicek wasn't there for every one of those titles, but certainly for the second half of Russell's career, Havlicek had played a big role in the success of those Boston teams. And I think at that time, again, he's one of those people that if you talk to fans or you read articles from people who were actually there and saw these guys play, people had a tremendous amount of respect for John Havlicek. And so when I was looking at small forwards, Havlicek was the guy that that I looked at too. So otherwise, everybody that we mentioned, you know, I think we had very similar lists. There were very few guys that, you know, were kind of not, you know, that one of us thought of that the other ones didn't have somewhere on our list. So can we do this for the last 5 minutes? Just run through our top.
Let's do the top five. Do top five.
Top five, regardless of position.
Yeah.
Top five, regardless of position. Dan, go ahead.
I'm gonna check because I gotta. I'll go first.
Jason, you start. I'll go second. Dan, you can work your list while Jason and I are sharing ours.
Okay. Well, I think one and two. I think we're in agreement. I've got Jordan, then I've got LeBron. I've got Wilt three, and I could. That's just my opinion. Wilt three, Russell four, and then I have Oscar Robertson five, I think. That's what I'm going to go with. And that's just me kind of doing it off the cuff here because I just think that's where I'm going. So Jordan, LeBron, Wilt, Russell, Robertson.
All right. So I have Jordan one, Wilt two, LeBron three, Magic four, Russell five.
Magic would be my six, by the way.
Just got it.
All right. Jordan one. LeBron 2, Russell 3, Wilt 4, and then 5, as my brain explodes, what the hell, I'll say Larry Bird.
All right, fair enough.
You know what, no, I'll change that, Tim Duncan, final answer.
All right, Tim Duncan, 5, all right, interesting. I think what's interesting is at the back end of that list, like guys that didn't make my three teams, I had Shaq in the top 15. I had Hakeem in the top 15, regardless of position. So those are the two guys that I moved into the top 15 players, and I moved out. Let's see, who did I move out? I moved out Barkley and I moved out Nash out of my top five.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't know that John Stockton would crack my top 20. To be honest with you, if I was I went positionally, but if I was to just say my top 20 players all time, I don't think John Stockton gets there. I mean, I have him as a point guard, but I don't think that he's top 20 all time positionally.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, well, fellas, I have to say that I was anticipating this being a lot of fun, and it was everything that I hoped for and more. It's always great to be able to go back and talk hoops and look at the history of the game, because sometimes we tend to focus so much on what's going on right now in the moment that we forget about the great history that the professional game has here in the NBA, the ABA, and just the level of play that all these guys were able to attain in their careers is just incredible. And so it was a pleasure to be able to hash this out with you guys. To our audience out there, if you've stuck with us here for the nearly hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours, however long we are, we thank you for sticking with us all the way through. Hopefully you found it to be entertaining. If you have any quibbles, arguments, debates, thoughts,
send them to the sports speller on Twitter.
You can hit up any of us on Twitter with your thoughts, and we will do our best to try to respond and tell you that you're wrong. But at any rate, Dan, we want to thank you for jumping on and being a guest, first timer here on the Hoopheads Pod. It was a lot of fun to hash this out with you, and it sounds like we're probably going to have you jump back on at some point during the season. Once we get the NBA back up and rolling, we'll try to get you on for another show. Jay, it's a lot of fun staying up late and doing this one. I'm glad we did it off the all-decade team last week. I think this was a great idea. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully, our audience will find some value and some entertainment in it. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
That's a wrap on our two-part episode focusing on our all-time All-NBA teams. We hope you enjoyed the discussion that we had as much as we enjoyed having it. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at HoopheadsPod or for Dan Menigan at The Sports Filler to further discussion that we had on these two episodes.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.